Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. Let's face it, the future is now. We're living in a connected cyber society, and we need to stop ignoring it or pretending that it's not affecting us. Join us as we explore how humanity arrived at this current state of digital reality and what it means to live amongst so much technology and data. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
Here we go. This is redefining society, and there is a lot to redefine. I'm flying solo today. I'm Marco Ciappelli from ITSB Magazine. Sean is redefining society or technology or cybersecurity somewhere else. Not sure. We'll have to find out on the next time that we have an episode together. But I am in good company, and I have to say I'm really excited for this podcast because I'm not sure that there is many things that define society more than art. Art goes back to the first drawing in the cavern, back when the humans were not even staying in community together, but still that need to create art. And here we are talking about artificial intelligence that creates art for us and is for sale somewhere, and people are buying it. So let's see how we got from there to here. And to do that, we have Ben Kovalis joining us. Thank you for being on the show, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. So we know that you are the founder of an art gallery that sells virtual, artificial intelligence created. The product is real, it's not virtual. People can actually buy the painting. The difference is instead of being made with brushes and people getting dirty and all colorful, I guess, there is a different way to do it. So tell us a little bit about yourself and then, what you do, and then we'll dive in into what does it mean for society, all of this.
I'll be happy to. I am the co-founder and the CMO of Art AI Gallery. And as you said, it is an art gallery, which is also a deep tech startup. And what we do is we develop algorithms, many different algorithms, with the purpose of creating completely new art that ends up in people's home and that looks very much like you and I know to identify as human created art, with a slight difference that the only part of humanity in the creation process was designing the algorithm and making sure that it is working well enough in order for someone that never seen an AI artwork before to not be able to actually distinguish between it and something that was created 20 or 100 or 1500 years ago.
So you say it's a slight difference. I think it's a big difference, the fact that it's not an actual person doing it, because in the definition of art is the human, you know, creativity, the human creation of an artifact, or of a painting, or of, you know, poetry. Poetry is art as well. And we know that artificial intelligence is trying to do that as well, trying to make movies, write books. Some are good, some maybe not so good yet. But the common denominator for this is the fact that there is, as you mentioned, an algorithm. So let's start from there. First of all, for the people that don't not really familiar with what an algorithm is, how about we start from that and how that connect to human and that connect to the creation process?
Yeah, fortunately enough, to explain about the creation process, we don't even need to go too deep into what an algorithm is. We effectively, we're going to explain what it is. But in order to do that, we can simply speak about a neural network. And the cool thing about a neural network, it could be really complex, but it could also be pretty cool to talk about because it basically comes to mimic the human brain. Now, this is, of course, kind of an understatement or an overstatement because it is very far from the way that the human brain works. But the basic format, the basic concept come to mimic it. And when I'm saying that we're creating algorithms that create art, that means that we try to use technology, we try to use artificial intelligence in order to mimic the same process that a human goes through when they develop their own sense of creativity, and the same process that an artist goes through when he creates the first piece of art, the second piece of art, and that is changing throughout its life. And for us to do that, we actually need two different artificial intelligence, two different AIs, two different neural networks. And they are working in some sort of a format, comes from a family of algorithms that is called GANs, generative adversarial networks. Basically, we have two different neural networks. Let's call one of them the artist, and the other one we're going to call the critic. And the critic never makes actual art itself. It just receives a lot of data that includes
human creation. It's just like in real life. They just critic. Being sarcastic here. Most of the people that critic, they're not actually artists. So sorry, little parenthesis.
Okay, now I understand what you're saying here.
sorry,
keep going. In that case, it is very much like reality, and I'm probably going to use this little punchline in the future.
Please.
So this critic receives a lot of data from us, millions of different art samples, and there's a whole operation of making sure that the data that we use is the right data because it's going to have implications of how the actual art is going to look like later on. And this critic receives the opportunity to learn this data, to get inspired by this data. It doesn't copy and paste it. It doesn't save it anywhere. It just learns and develops its own sense of style by understanding what is an actual artistic element that the human sees as artistic, what type of color palettes are more artistic or more visually appealing than others, what type of objects are more common to see in famous art creations of the past, and they basically develop its own sense of style. Now, the way that it works is that this critic has a neural network, and for those that are not completely familiar with machine learning, it's basically this classic image of a lot of circles and lines that are connected together. We call them weights, and these weights are basically what comprises this neural network. And then we have this other AI that we called the artist. And the artist is actually the AI that makes the new designs, and it makes a lot of them, but it never sees any type of human art. Never, not before it starts creating, not after it starts creating. Its only way to improve, because it needs to improve, because in the beginning it doesn't really know what it's doing. Its only way for it to improve is to receive a grade, to receive a score from the critic. So again, this is kind of similar to what we understand from humanity. Artists, even though they have their own creations style, many times they need to make the critic happy if they want the art community to recognize them as successful artists. So in the beginning, we take a random seed, which is basically a big sequence of numbers, a matrix of numbers, and we feed it into the artist. Basically, it goes through the neural network of the artist, which is very similar to the neural network of the critic. And based on the formation of the weights, it is going to come up with a design. In the beginning, it's going to be a big blob of colors, very, very pixelated. And it's going to send this design to the critic. Now, the critic is going to get it together with a human-created design. So that two designs at the same time, doesn't know which one is which. And as I said earlier, the purpose of the critic is to grade them in a way that the human-created art will receive the highest possible score, and the art that was created by an AI will receive the lowest possible score. Obviously, it's quite easy in the beginning because it's a big blob of colors, doesn't have any artistic elements in it, so it's easy to give it almost the lowest possible score. And when the artist receives this score, it understands that it did a mistake, because the purpose of the artist is to try and kind of, let's say, fool the critic, make the critic believe that what it created was actually created by a human, not by an AI. It didn't do a very good job. So it have a lot of fixes to do, a lot of adjustments to do. And the way that it happens, it's a process that is called backpropagation. Basically, it takes the gap. It takes the deviation between the score that you wanted to get, which is the maximum available score, and the score that it actually got, which is almost the lowest one. And it uses these inputs to change the formation of the weights. So the next time that it receives a random seed and needs to come up with a design, it will be slightly more similar to what we know as human art. And that process happens time and time and time again. But this is not the only process that is taking place. We also have the critic going through a very similar process, because as time goes by and the artist becomes better and better, because it receives inputs from the critic on how to change, how to be better, it is actually becoming more difficult for the critic to assess whether the creations of the artist are human-made or not. And it starts to make mistakes. Instead of giving a design 0.1, it gives it 0.2 and 0.3 and 0.4. And as it gets closer to the maximum possible score, let's say that the maximum possible score is 1, it means that it needs to make some corrections itself. It needs to backpropagate the information and take this error that he made and change its own neural network, so the next time it will be able to judge, to criticize the design of the artist a bit better. So we have two different AIs, two different neural networks. The artist always working to be better at fooling the critic, and the critic is working to get better in understanding that this artwork is actually created by an AI, until we reach a certain level when it is almost impossible even for an expert to distinguish between the art that is created and the art that is created by humans and the art that is created by AI. And
so this is fascinating. And I think for a lot of people, I'm aware of what adversarial artificial intelligence is. I mean, you use it in a lot of things. Isn't when you hear about the famous chess games, right? Artificial intelligence versus the grandmaster, or the Go games, they always make the news. But there is a lot, as you're sharing right now, different application for this. And there are many in cybersecurity, for example, the adversarial artificial intelligence, it's used a lot. So what I would like to go into right now to open up the conversation is, what is the role of humans into creating the algorithm? Because often we hear about bias, right? There are bias in the algorithm, the one that is used in HR, the one that is using in, you know, in judging if somebody is guilty or not, and how far can we go to let the algorithm or artificial intelligence get to make decision. Now, in this case, it's a little bit lighter of a topic, of course, but it's anyway a product that is going to be evaluated, acquired by humans. And how much of humanity, that's my question, how much of humanity is in this process? How can we get used to it and appreciate it as human, knowing that apart from being a novelty, it's not made by human? I don't know, it's a little bit philosophical, but what's your thought on that?
I love this question. This must be probably one of my favorite questions, especially the way that you phrased it. How much of humanity is in there? And my answer is going to have two parts. One of them is the part of the humans that make the actual algorithm. And I used to say that there is no bias. And today I can say there's a lot of bias. And additionally, it was the part of humanity in creating the new generation of art. And because I know that you went through the gallery before the show, then I can even tell you that you now have some sort of part in the creation of future designs. And this is because everything that I went through in my previous answer was only the tip of the iceberg, was using technology that some of it existed before we started the company, and some of it are new developments that we integrated into the existing technologies that were familiar to us before. But this is only one part of the creativity process. Now we have a gallery and we have thousands of artworks and we have tens of thousands of visitors coming to view the artworks because everything is online on a weekly basis. And every time someone goes into the gallery and starts looking at different artworks, starts making purchases, adding things to carts, all of this information, all of this data is then translated and helps us understand which artworks are more engaging than others. Now, I'm using the word engaging and not beautiful because at this point, it's so subjective. It's very hard to understand each and everyone's motives into liking a specific artwork. But we can know that some artworks are more engaging than others. And the beautiful thing is that we created a loop between the engagement of the gallery visitors and the future algorithms that we're developing. So every new generation, and we're introducing a lot of new generations, is actually different by the fact that it is affected by so many different people, by so much of humanity, that it actually changes the output that we receive. Now, just for clarification, that means that in the beginning, we were trying to kind of mimic human art using artificial intelligence based on the greatest art that we all know. The second stage is something that was never done before, is improving the art not based on something that we knew as good art before. Improving the art based on the, let's say, pure and immediate reactions of people that are being exposed to this art for the very first time. Some of them are big art enthusiasts, some of them are big tech savvy, and some of them just fascinated to see what it is, and they are now contributing to how the future art is going to look like.
So it's an ongoing learning process. That's what the algorithm does. It's always learning. The more data you give, and the data, of course, are coming from humanity. Some people give data to artificial intelligence by going on social media and liking something or telling Google that I'm not a robot or any other CAPTCHA, of course, where you're actually teaching artificial intelligence what a crosswalk looks like or a light or a traffic light and so on. And so you're doing it even if you know you're not. In this case, I think the big question in my head is this. So you say art, of course, is subjective. I mean, that there's a saying, it's in the eye of the beholder, beauty, right? I mean, there are pieces of art, I got to be honest, I don't know why they're valued that much money. I'm not going to go into names here, but there are artists that, I don't know, I mean, I wouldn't pay that much, even if I had the money. And others that are more fascinated, maybe because I'm a little bit more of a classical, being Italian and coming from Florence, a little bit of Renaissance art in me. But art is very subjective, very personal. And I'm wondering if ultimately getting all this input from everybody, can you say that it's kind of a race or a process to get to the perfect piece of art? I mean, is that what drives the critic to give point? Like, is this perfect enough? And who says what is perfect and what isn't in art?
Again, an amazing question. And basically for me, these are like five different questions and I'm going to try and answer them all.
All right, go for
it. I really like the fact that you said that art is personal, because I think so as well. And this was one of the things that guided us when we started the company, when we started the gallery, because artificial intelligence gives us the chance to keep everything in a price that is not out of the reach of most of the people, that is affordable, but still be able to provide each and every individual with a one-of-a-kind artwork that will never be available for anyone else to purchase. And that's important, because people want to be able to connect with the art, even if they're looking for something that is more decorative, not necessarily something that they want to collect. They just want to hang it in their personal space. It's important for them to be personal. And when you're speaking about trying to reach the perfect piece of art, and we're kind of designing a technological system with the purpose of reaching the perfect piece of art, then I'm going to argue and say that you need to have some human involvement in order to reach the perfect piece of art, because there's no such thing. Each and every person have a different ideal of how the art that it creates is going to look like. And I'm very soon going to tell you what is the solution that we have for that and how we are kind of connecting technology and humanity in order to reach that.
I can't wait to hear solutions. So often we hear questions, and I love questions because make people think, but I want to know what your solution is.
So I'm getting right to it. Basically, what we did is we designed a system that is kind of trying to reach a perfection, but not really. It's trying to get a limit. It's trying to get a limit in which in this limit, it's too hard for the machine to create more engaging art. And we understood quite early on that for us to be able to truly connect with humanity, we need to find a way to make humans a bigger part of the process, to make the person itself become some sort of the artist. And this is why in a matter of a few weeks, we're going to introduce the newest development, the newest interface that is going to allow everyone to, by filling up a very intuitive questionnaire, some sort of like a intuitive form, interactive, that basically comes to learn what is your specific artistic style, what do you define as creativity, what sort of artistic elements do you like more than others, and by this questionnaire generate completely new pieces of art on the spot that are going to be available in a matter of a few seconds in a form of a feed. But this is not the end. You get this feed. This feed is full of completely new designs. No one saw these designs before. And you are going through this feed, which was generated based on your preferences, and you're choosing the art that you like more. And as you're choosing the art, the feed changes, it adjusted, it gets a finer tuned to really get your specific desires. And your specific desires will probably change while you're going through this feed. You're thinking about perfection, you want to change a little thing, you want to change the colors, you want to change the objects. So you're kind of going through a process with yourself, with the help of an AI, until you reach this perfect design that you want. It is personal for you. It is the first time that anyone has ever seen it, because it was just now generated. And you can decide to become the owner of this art piece. And this art piece is not only going to be, probably is going to match what you're trying to achieve in decorating your space. It also includes a part of you, because without you, this piece of art could never have been created.
So this is a podcast, so it's audio. And I'm here, you're probably Ben, we see each other, and I'm smiling because I'm going, again, to run a comparison between what we're doing with the digital world and what we have actually been doing for the entire history of humanity. Like, I'm thinking the patrons of the art. I'm thinking about, of course, the Medici family, right? And those that said the same thing. They go to an artist. They said, you know, they can go to Masaccio or Brunelleschi and say, well, I'm going to pay you money, but I want you to paint this inside this church or inside this building. And I want it to represent me, but I want it with this feeling. Because, you know, I mean, I'm paying you. So, you know, I wanted to do it on my taste. And so I feel like this is kind of like the same thing. In a way, everybody become patron of art and say, I want to build the piece of art that really reflect my taste. And I don't know. I don't know where to go with this. I'm really fascinated by it's almost, I'm going to call it a democratization of art.
I would definitely agree. I would definitely agree. I want to go back to what inspired us to start that and what inspired us to sell each piece of art only once. And this is not easy, logistically speaking. And again, we're not only a gallery, we're in e-commerce. And the system is not meant to sell each product, basically. It's not a product, but the system sees it as a product only once. It confuses everything.
Sorry, are you using non-fungible tokens, blockchain technology with all this process?
We're using blockchain technology. not to create NFTs. Working on NFTs because we have these capabilities is something that we are also looking at, but not connected to Art AI Gallery. We are using blockchain because it's very important for us to promise exclusivity. And to promise exclusivity, we're providing a certificate of authenticity, which is on the blockchain. And every time that someone becomes a new owner of a piece of art, it receives this certificate of authenticity and is able to view it, is able, if he wants to sell the piece of art, is able even to transfer on the certificate of authenticity. So blockchain is important for that. But speaking about exclusivity and about creating everything as a one of a kind, it is very much connected to democratizing this art world, because we, and you talked about it earlier, some art pieces, that, of course, they're original, but the prices are so high for many, I think probably for most of the people, it's hard to understand why. And until they see something they like, they have to make a decision. It's either they go for a reproduction for it to fit their budget, or to skip it and go for a different piece of art. And this democratization is actually helping us offer people the opportunity to don't make this decision. You can have something that you like. It could be original, and no one else is going to have it. And that's going to be completely yours.
So when I buy something, if I do buy that, what do I get? Do I get the digital part of it, or do I actually get a printed, a concrete piece of art?
You get both. Okay. You get both. So in the beginning, we were simply sending the bespoke piece of art to the home of the buyers. And that was it. And of course, including his certificate of authenticity. But because we have this ability, because we're sort of a weird marketplace, because we're presenting only our own art and we are the owner of the content. So not only that we can provide exclusivity, we can also provide the digital file that is the design that you actually purchased as a collector. And at the beginning, we didn't really know what to do with this capability, so we checked. We allowed people to opt in for getting the digital file. And we discovered that so many people really wanted the digital file. And some of them just for insurance, to make sure that if something happens to their one-of-a-kind artwork, they have an alternative. Some of them wanted to use it for like different purposes, their Gmail background, printed like on like a very, very small piece of paper, and like have it in places, show it around, and other reasons that we couldn't even imagine. And we're speaking like about 40% of the people that was especially important for them to get that. They were willing to pay more in order to get the digital file. So we understood, okay, basically everyone wants it. We're going to include it within everything. So now when you're getting a piece of art, you're getting the actual artwork to your home, you're getting the certificate of authenticity, and you're getting the digital file. And as long as you're not using it for a commercial use, you can do whatever you want with it.
So this is going longer because I knew I had the feeling that I'm too passionate about this stuff. But I had a conversation. I hope you have another 5 minutes. I had a conversation, and it's going to go probably already live by the time that people are going to listen to this conversation. And it was about music, non-fungible tokens in the release of tickets. I spoke with like a producer that is going this way. So to stop scalping, reselling bots, buying tickets online, and then making the price go up and so forth. But there was one part of the conversation where we talked about how artists, musicians, are getting really excited about this because they think about all the different ways that they can apply their art to include in the tickets or in the release of an album. And maybe it's the lyrics, maybe it's something unique and so forth. So, I mean, we are talking about the creative side. Now I'm wondering, have you got any feedback from artists and how do they react? And I'm talking about artists that do the physical painting or sculpturing, or I mean, you guys don't do sculpture. I'm guessing not yet, maybe 3D coming soon. But can a traditional, kind of don't like to call it like that, but I think it makes sense, a traditional real life artist can get involved into the creative process Are they hating what you guys are doing? Are they loving what you guys are doing? Do they see opportunities for expanding their art even more? What do you know about that?
So yes, 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 and yes. They love it. They hate it. They are invited to take part in the process, and they do take part in the process.
Okay.
All right. So we allocated a whole section in our homepage for digital artists, especially digital artists that want to take part. And the reason for this is maybe for some it's going to be counterintuitive, but digital artists, and I know that you ask more about like the physical artists, but digital artists,
it's more that the, you know, can you become a hybrid in a way?
Yeah,
doing both.
Yeah. So I'm going like to finish my short point about digital artists that are, they're always keen to learn about new technologies, and they're very much connected to this world. And I guess they understand, they're the quickest to understand that this is not coming to replace human art. This is coming to enhance human art. And for several reasons that we already spoke about the limitations that machines have and that humans simply don't. On the other hand, we do have some different, let's say, the opposition that look at it, and maybe they're less familiar with how AI works, and maybe they didn't have a chance to get this information, which is important to have if you want to be secure that the world is not going to be taken over by machines anytime soon.
That's a big fear that, you know, everybody has.
Yeah,
it's going to be covering art, though, in this case. It's not, robots killing you. This is like art everywhere.
Yeah, as long as you have an AI-generated art in your home, you should be completely safe. Of course, I'm kidding.
You're a friend. You're not a foe.
Of course, I'm kidding. Because, you know, when you think about it, the machine creates the art. The machine is trying to learn about the art. It's scary when you understand, okay, some people worked really, really, really hard to get a proof of concept that in the beginning wasn't very successful, and only after a lot of human hours became very successful. You understand this is not really frightening. Kind of the AI is more scared than you are scared from the AI. But it is completely understandable that some people sees that, and art was kind of the final frontier when it comes to like using machines to create it. And some of them really scared of it. Some of them go out of their way to reach us and send us email, letting us know what they think about it. But we also see really fascinating discussions on our Facebook page. So many comments. I've probably gone through thousands and thousands of them, of people speaking about different aspects of art, because it is fascinating. You're combining technology and art. It is so weird. It is so new. And you see people reach new type of understanding about this process. And you have a lot of artists commenting there, and artists are very creative by nature. So if you go through the comments, like I go through the comments and I learn new things about it by reading some of the comments that are made by artists. And I guess that there's always going to be support and there's always going to be opposition. We're not inventing the wheel here. There's always support and opposition on most things, but maybe it's simply what makes it a bit more interesting.
Yeah, you're always going to have that. Every new thing in the history of humanity always had resistance. The early, you know, buyers, the early adopter, the one that, like, you know, I could totally see my dad be like, I'm not ever going to buy or go look in a museum with, you know, a computer that make art, because it's used to, like, you know, the artists from 500,000-600,000 years ago. But you got to be open, because this is the future and this is how we do things. And I want to close with, first of all, thanking you for a very exciting conversation. And I think we will probably meet again in front of a microphone, and who knows, maybe one time in person as well. To maybe talk even further about this, maybe from a different angles, but from different angles. But the idea, I think, that art, and it's such a core element of humanity. And knowing that in the end, technology doesn't rain from the sky. Probably people are tired to hear me to say this, but we do that. we have a vision. We create the tools. It can be a hammer or and a nail. That's technology too. Maybe it was weird back in the days, but then we, you know, it's now it's all technology. I feel like in this case is the same thing. You're going to have people that love it, people who doesn't, but this is what we're doing in our society. And with that, we're redefining it. So I find it exciting. I'm not going to say it takes value away from the past. It doesn't take value away from real art at all. It's just a different form of art. And there are virtual museums now that you can visit. You put the goggles on and you experience virtual reality. So why not have an art created by an artificial intelligence that, by the way, we created? So I don't know. That's my closing. It's all connected, right?
So I completely agree with everything you said. And I'll argue that not only that I don't think that it is causing any harm to the value of human-made art, I actually think that in the future is going to help increase the value of human art, because the human art of the past, which is going to be, you're always going to see new human art, but it will also always be something that was there before. And therefore, the value is only going to increase. It is now a part that was always there, surrounded by new type of art. And probably AI art is not going to be the latest development of art. There are going to be newer developments in the future that we cannot even imagine right now. But art as we know it today, human-created art, is always going to remain there. And the value and kind of the sentiments that we have for it is only going to grow as time goes by.
I agree. Not just the one from the past, but even the one that it's created right now. I mean, there is created by a human, created by artificial intelligence. I see always these two things, to technology and humanity, to coexist. And it's a way to augment our human capacities. Creativity, well, it's just a different way to do it. So I disagree with the people that have fear for the future. I think it's exciting, and I think that art is going to be part of that. So, Ben, great conversation. Thank you for joining us. And I don't know, guys, whatever you have to think about it and whatever you want to let us know, maybe once we post this, put a comment on social media, on itspmagazine.com, on Twitter, LinkedIn, and so forth. And I'm sure somebody's going to be pissed about it. Somebody's going to love it. But that's what we are. It's diversity. And that's what humans are. All diverse. And we all like different things, right? So with that, Ben, thank you again. Everybody, thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next time when we're trying to redefine society a little bit more. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impacts of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.